Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, March 21st, 2024. We're the only podcast that's separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. Irish Prime Minister Leo Varadkar is stepping down.
Vietnam's President Vo Van Tuong is resigning.
Hong Kong passes its controversial Article 23 national security law.
The Pentagon chief says Ukraine's survival is at stake.
Jair Bolsonaro is indicted for alleged fraud in COVID vaccine records.
Donald Trump is suing ABC News for an interview referencing the E. Jean Carroll case.
While Trump-backed candidates are victorious in primaries in three states.
Ron DeSantis suggests Martha's Vineyard is a destination for Haitian migrants.
A team of scientists splices HIV DNA out of infected cells.
And a new study suggests that young people are less happy than older generations.
You think?
Isn't that like how it always is?
Yeah.
I've never seen a happy young generation.
I haven't either. News from the Republic of Ireland as Prime Minister Varadkar is stepping down. Here are the facts as agreed upon by New York Times, Fox News, BBC News, The Irish Times, and Sky News. Leo Varadkar has announced he will be stepping down as the Republic of Ireland's, or ORI, Prime Minister. This decision comes days after his coalition government failed to pass two referendums. Varadkar cited, quote, both personal and political reasons for his decision. While stepping down as the leader of the Fine Gael party with immediate effect, Varadkar will remain as Taoiseach until a successor is decided in an election set to take place by April 16th. Varadkar became the ROI's youngest prime minister and Fine Gael leader in 2017, serving as Taoiseach until 2020 before returning to the role in 2022. Deputy Prime Minister Michael Martin said the ROI's coalition government will continue until the expiry of his term. Varadkar said he was, quote, no longer the best person for the role, and that part of leadership was knowing the right time to pass on the baton to someone else. He also predicted the current government could win the next election and that his party could gain further seats. The ROI's referendums attempted to both remove references in the Constitution to a woman's, quote, life within the home and duties in the home, as well as extend the definition of, quote, family to include durable unmarried relationships. Those proposals were rejected by 74% and 67.7%.
Yeah, I've had a few of those durable unmarried relationships.
Oh, I'm in one right now.
Thank you for laying out the facts on our first story. I'm going to start the spins with our left narrative provided by The Guardian. Despite the referendum defeats, Varadkar's decision to step down is surprising and disappointing. Varadkar's outcries against the war in Gaza and his role during Brexit and the COVID pandemic showed he's a voice that could have been crucial in the future. But as the first openly gay European leader and the son of an immigrant, his tenure will undoubtedly leave its mark on Ireland's history.
The right narrative comes from The Telegraph. With two embarrassing referendum results and his obsession with progressive optics and rhetoric over real change, Varadkar's resignation is a favor to ROI. A man of little conviction outside of the whims of the urban elites of Dublin, the majority of the country will be pleasantly surprised that the opportunity has arisen to move in a new direction.
And the Metaculous Prediction community is going to waste no time getting started. Their first nerd narrative, they think that there's a 45% chance that Ireland and Northern Ireland will reunite before January 1st of 2051.
Oh, you don't say, lad.
Oh, I do say.
I do say.
Vietnam's president has resigned. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, Al Jazeera, Vietnam News, and NBC. Just over a year since his election, Vietnam's ruling Communist Party has accepted the resignation of President Võ Văn Tuông, whom it accused of having so-called shortcomings that, quote, negatively impacted public opinion, affecting the reputation of the party, state, and him personally. While the presidency is seen as a largely nominal position, it is one of the four highest offices in Vietnam's government. The government decided to remove Tuong after a special parliamentary session on, quote, personal matters. The Communist Party's Central Committee also removed Tuong's positions in the Politburo, the Central Committee, and the Chairman of the National Defense and Security Council. While the one-party government has voiced no specific accusations against Tuong, its decision is the latest in a broader leadership shakeup over bribery and corruption allegations. This follows the removal of Tuong's predecessor, former President Nguyen Xuân Phúc, who was accused of, quote, violations and wrongdoings, days before Tuong's removal. The former head of the Quang Nhai province was removed for alleged corruption that occurred a decade ago. In response to Tuong's removal, the Ho Chi Minh City Stock Exchange dropped 3%, with analysts raising concern over the stability of Vietnam's governing system.
Adam, thank you for the facts. Narrative A comes from Tua Tre News. The Vietnamese government has clear rules regarding office holders' conduct, which Tuong decided to violate and thus forced him to relinquish all official duties. Tuong's corrupt actions have resulted in the public's distrust of their leaders, which is why the Central Committee had to step in and remove him from his position of influence.
Spin's going to continue with the narrative B provided by New York Times. Despite the country's recent economic success, thanks to a manufacturing boom from companies such as Nike, Adidas, and Lululemon, Vietnam is a tightly controlled communist dictatorship. The removal of President Tuong, as was the case for his predecessor, simply means the ruling party's major power players wanted him gone.
The nerds of Metaculus say there's a 50% chance that there will be at least four communist states in 2050. Hong Kong's legislature passes a new national security law. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, Hong Kong Free Press, HKFP, BBC News, South China Morning Post, CNN, and Council on Foreign Relations. Hong Kong's Legislative Council, or LegCo, passed on Tuesday the Safeguarding National Security Bill, otherwise known as Article 23, a new national security law that some human rights organizations and foreign governments have said would roll back freedoms and silence dissent. The legislation approved by all 89 lawmakers, including the LegCo president, states that citizens found to have committed treason, insurrection, incitement to mutiny, and sabotage endangering national security in collusion with an external force will see life imprisonment. In addition to stiffer penalties, Article 23 gives police the right to detain suspects for over 2 weeks without charge and allows for closed-door trials, among other provisions. This bill, which the local government claims received overwhelming support during its one-month public consultation period, will come into force on Saturday. Authorities have argued that the legislation is needed to close gaps in the 2020 National Security Law, or NSL. 2 decades ago, an attempt to pass Article 23 laws prompted large protests in Hong Kong that forced the government to retreat. Hong Kong saw its sovereignty transferred in 1997 to China, which pledged to preserve the capitalist system and many civil liberties. As of July 2023, 260 individuals are known to have been arrested under the NSL for protesting the Beijing-endorsed extradition bill.
Eric, thanks for the facts. The spins are going to start with a pro-China narrative brought to us by People's Daily. Hong Kong security legislation is a further indicator of Beijing's success in ensuring the safety and prosperity of Greater China, while ensuring the protection of personal freedoms. Article 23 will allow Hong Kong to appropriately expand its powers in defense against all those who seek to undermine the region, as its flourishing relationship with the central government continues to grow.
Human Rights Watch gives us an anti-China narrative. Oppression, already permeating all levels of society in Hong Kong, will now only grow stronger and deeper as Beijing continues to clamp down against any potential challenge to its authoritarian rule. While the people of Hong Kong will continue to fight for hope and freedom, history will likely look back at passing of Article 23 as a dark day for hope, democracy, and human rights.
And the nerds are going to continue with their predictions. They think that there's a 50% chance that Hong Kong will no longer be a special administrative region of China by September of 2046. And that's according to the Metaculus prediction community.
Is Fui still there? I often wonder.
In Hong Kong?
Yeah.
There's got to be a few filing cabinets around that he's living in.
He's kind of like Richard Simmons. He disappeared.
According to the Pentagon chief, Ukraine's survival is in danger. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, Politico, and Associated Press. At a time when U.S. funding for Ukraine was essentially dried up, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said on Tuesday that Ukraine's survival is at risk. Speaking to reporters after a meeting of the Ukraine Defense Contact Group in Germany, Lloyd said, "Today Ukraine's survival is in danger and America's security is at risk. I leave here today fully determined to keep U.S. security assistance and ammunition flowing. And that's a matter of survival and sovereignty for Ukraine, and it's a matter of honor and security for America." However, Ukraine did not walk away from the meeting empty-handed. Germany unveiled a new 500 million euro, or 545 million U.S. dollar, military aid package, and a number of countries made smaller pledges. On the front lines, Russia's advance continues. On Tuesday, Russia's defense ministry said it captured the town of Horlivka, which lies roughly 6 miles or 10 kilometers west of Avdiivka, captured by Russia earlier in the year. Meanwhile, with Ukraine ramping up its use of missile strikes into the Russian border region of Belgorod, Russia said on Tuesday that officials will be evacuating 9,000 children from the region. A day earlier, after securing his fifth term as Russian president, Vladimir Putin announced that Russia would be creating a buffer zone to prevent Ukraine's Western-provided weapons from striking the country.
Thanks, Adam, for the facts. The first spin is a pro-establishment narrative coming from CNN. While the situation may feel distant to politicians and spectators in the West, that's not the case for those facing the brunt of Russian attacks. Without ammunition and artillery, Ukraine is being left almost defenseless, and it's imperative that this situation is rectified urgently if Ukraine is to stand any chance.
I've got a pro-Russian narrative provided by TASS. Aside from the avoidable loss of Ukrainian territory and men throughout this conflict, Ukraine's counteroffensive has failed and Kyiv is now losing the war. More money for arms will simply bring about more death and destruction. Ukraine would never have fought this war against Russia without U.S. and EU weapons. Now that these weapons are running dry, Ukraine must accept the reality that Russia will never cease its defense of the Donbas or Crimea.
The nerds from Metaculus say there's a 7% chance there will be a bilateral ceasefire or peace agreement in the Russo-Ukraine conflict in 2024. Bolsonaro has been indicted over alleged fraud in COVID vaccine records. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Daily Mail, National Review, Washington Post, Associated Press, CNN, and BBC News. Brazil's Supreme Court unveiled on Tuesday an indictment against former President Jair Bolsonaro for allegedly falsifying COVID vaccination records in the country's public health database for his own benefit and that of his daughter. Police claim that the conservative leader, while in office, ordered one of his aides to manipulate vaccine certificates so they could enter the U.S. at a time when proof of vaccination was still required for entry. Though people on diplomatic or official foreign government travel were exempt, the Brazilian Foreign Ministry said last year that Bolsonaro wasn't on official state business and had no diplomatic meeting scheduled as he entered the U.S. in late 2022. Should the Prosecutor General's office move forward with the indictment, Bolsonaro will face criminal charges for the first time since leaving office. He could face up to 12 years in prison for tampering with public records and 4 years in jail for criminal association. Last May, Brazil's federal police raided his home in Brasilia in connection with the suspected criminal efforts to forge vaccination records. Bolsonaro reiterated at the time that he had never taken the vaccine, denying any forgery on his part. His health records say that the former president received the vaccine in Sao Paulo in 2021, on a day that he wasn't in the city, according to the findings of an investigation.
Thanks for the facts, Eric. I've got Common Dreams giving us the left narrative. Bolsonaro presided over one of the worst COVID responses in the world as he claimed vaccines were ineffective. It appears his corrupt ways and spreading of misinformation have finally caught up to him. On top of that, he instigated a coup d'etat after he lost in a free and fair election. This forgery scandal is one of many that show his character as an amoral demagogue. Hopefully justice will be served in this and the many other cases he's faced with.
Did you say coup d'etat or deja vu?
Oh, man.
The Wall Street Journal comes back with a right narrative. You don't have to be a Bolsonaro supporter to see that Lula is using the judicial system to punish his predecessor. Lula is a leftist character politician who was convicted on corruption charges before they were stunningly reversed by activist judges. Right-leaning figures across the nation are being censored, and checks and balances are being curtailed as the legal system is increasingly used as a weapon against opponents. Leftist institutions are being weaponized against Bolsonaro.
Trump is suing ABC News for defamation. Here are the facts as agreed upon by U.S. News and World Report, CNN, Spectrum News, New York Post, Newsmax, and CBS. Former President Donald Trump on Monday filed a defamation suit against ABC News and host George Stephanopoulos over comments the anchor made about the ruling against Trump in the E. Jean Carroll defamation case. The suit focuses on Stephanopoulos during an interview with U.S. Representative Nancy Mace, the Republican from South Carolina, saying Trump was found guilty of so-called rape. The jury in Carroll's civil trial ruled that Trump sexually abused her but found she did not prove rape. The jury ordered Trump to pay $5 million in damages. In a separate case, a jury ordered Trump to pay Carroll $83 million in damages for defamation. Trump is appealing. Filed in a U.S. court in Miami, Trump's suit alleges Stephanopoulos made defamatory claims, quote, with malice or with a reckless disregard for the truth, during the March 10th interview. The anchor pressed Mace about how she could support Trump after he was, quote, found liable for rape. During the interview, Mace explained to Stephanopoulos that the civil judgment was not about rape, and Trump never faced criminal rape charges. She later accused the host of bullying her over her endorsement of Trump. Trump, who is seeking unspecified damages, must prove that Stephanopoulos' statements were both incorrect and met the heightened standard of malice, i.e., either Stephanopoulos knew it was false or disregarded the truth, in order to prove he's been defamed as a public figure.
Thanks, Adam, for the facts. The first spin is a pro-Trump narrative coming from Federalist. Kudos to Trump for fighting back against the slanderous media. Stephanopoulos and ABC News lied about Trump in order to score cheap political points while thinking they were above the law. It's bad enough that Carroll and a corrupt system are attempting to drain Trump of his resources. Stephanopoulos shouldn't be allowed to lie to his viewers about the judgment against the former president without paying a price.
That's going to be countered with the anti-Trump narrative provided by the Daily Beast. Trump's desperate attempt to obtain quick cash is going nowhere. Beyond the fact that he has a high bar to clear in order to prove defamation of a public figure, what Stephanopoulos said was close to the truth. The jury found Carroll didn't prove rape under New York's narrow standard, but what Trump was found liable of doing would be considered rape in other jurisdictions.
Metaculous has a nerd narrative. It says there's a 65% chance that Trump will be found guilty of any crime in the Manhattan case before Election Day 2024. Ohio's Moreno is among three Trump-backed primary winners. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Forbes, USA Today, New York Times, and Fox News. On Tuesday, Republican candidates endorsed by former President Donald Trump, who has clinched enough delegates to earn the GOP presidential nomination, won their primaries in Ohio, Illinois, and California. Auto dealer Bernie Moreno won the Ohio Senate primary. U.S. Representative Mike Bost held off a primary challenger in his Illinois district. And State Representative Vince Fong won a plurality of votes in the special election to replace U.S. Representative Kevin McCarthy. Fong will compete in a runoff in May. Moreno's victory was crucial because the Ohio seat, which is currently held by Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, could determine control of the chamber. Moreno won an expensive race over State Senator Matt Dolan and Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose in a state Trump won twice. In addition to his endorsement from Trump, Moreno received support from the Senate Majority PAC, a Democratic super PAC, an indication of which GOP candidate Democrats want to face in November. That super PAC responded to Moreno's win by calling him a shady car salesman. These primary wins came the same night Trump won five more GOP primaries, Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, and Ohio, adding to his insurmountable delegate total on the way to his rematch with President Joe Biden.
Thanks, Eric. I'm going to start the spins with a pro-Trump narrative. It's provided by Breitbart. Trump has once again shifted the balance of power in down-ballot races, a sure sign Republicans will enjoy majorities in both the House and the Senate to start the former president's second term. Trump's popularity was never more powerful than in Ohio, where he twice helped Moreno pull ahead in a tight race. This should translate to Republicans finally ousting Brown.
The Democratic narrative comes from Mother Jones. Democrats should celebrate, and Republicans should be leery of getting behind Trump-backed candidates in 2024. The unpopularity of Republican policies has increased ever since Trump took office in 2016, with even conservative-leaning states like Ohio rejecting candidates and issues on the ballot that don't reflect their values in the past two midterms and in 2020. Trump isn't the kingmaker he thinks he is.
Well, the nerds think that there's a 75% chance that the GOP will control the Senate after the 2024 election. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Governor DeSantis might send Haitian migrants to Martha's Vineyard. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Forbes, Newsmax, The Telegraph, Fox News, and CBS. Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis on Tuesday, in an interview with conservative radio host Dana Loesch, hinted he might send Haitian migrants who are fleeing to his state illegally because of the island's gang crisis to Martha's Vineyard. Previously, DeSantis last week announced the deployment of additional security and surveillance personnel to the Florida Keys in anticipation of an influx of migrants from Haiti. He said in an interview that it's easier to return them home if they're apprehended at sea. In recent years, DeSantis and other Republican governors sent groups of migrants who arrived illegally to liberal-leaning states, including Massachusetts, New York, and California, after thousands entered southern states from Venezuela, Honduras, El Salvador, and Mexico. Since Florida is roughly 850 miles or 1,367 kilometers from Haiti, many migrants are attempting to flee by boat, and aid groups say nearly 1.4 million Haitians are near starving. On Friday, Florida law enforcement intercepted a boat carrying dozens of migrants with firearms and drugs. Criminal gangs have seized power over much of Haiti, prompting Prime Minister Ariel Henry to announce his resignation last week. Henry has been unable to re-enter Haiti for weeks because gangs have shut down airports.
Thanks, Adam, for the facts. The first spin is a Republican narrative coming from Valuetainment. DeSantis has an obligation to protect his state, and although it's tragic that Haiti has descended into chaos, the U.S. has no obligation to accept thousands of people. If the federal government won't allow Florida to return migrants who enter the U.S. illegally home, then DeSantis has no choice but to send them to the Democrat-run states that are actively inviting this mass migration.
And we follow up Republican narratives with Democratic narratives. I've got one here provided by CNN. DeSantis is showing he lacks basic human empathy and only cares about scoring political points. These refugees are desperate to get out of crisis-stricken Haiti, yet DeSantis and other Republicans have no worries rejecting them or shipping them farther from home. This is particularly galling considering how many leaders of Florida's Haitian American community have friends and family stuck in this chaos.
The nerds from Metaculous say there's a 50% chance that the rate of immigration enforcement in the U.S. in 2024, as a percentage of removals to encounters, will be at least 6%. Scientists cut out HIV DNA from infected cells. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Eureka Alert, Sky News, Metro, Evening Standard, Wales Online, and UNAIDS. Scientists at the Netherlands Amsterdam University Medical Center say they've used the Nobel Prize-winning CRISPR-Cas gene editing technology to remove all traces of HIV from infected cells in a laboratory. In their research, presented at the European Congress of Clinical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases, the scientists applied CRISPR-Cas scissors to cut the HIV DNA at designated spots. The approach, they claim, facilitated the elimination of harmful genes and the introduction of new genetic material into the cells. As they could create an efficient attack on the virus in different types of cells, the scientists strive to develop broad-spectrum HIV cure for all that can render most known HIV strains inactive. Though they seek to ensure their findings are as safe as possible for future clinical applications, the scientists say it is premature to declare that there is a functional HIV cure on the horizon. The research remains proof of concept. Approximately 39 million people worldwide were living with HIV in 2022. Since the beginning of the pandemic, 85.6 million people have acquired HIV, while 40.4 million have died of AIDS-related illnesses.
Thank you, Eric, for the fascinating facts of that story. We're going to start the spins with a narrative A, and it's provided by The Sun. Existing HIV medications can stop the spread of the virus, but can't eliminate it. This research raises hopes that the deadly infectious illness can be completely cured through a robust and safe CRISPR-Cas regimen, which can track down and chop the virus in secret reservoirs. Though the research won't immediately translate into a cure, these preliminary findings are encouraging.
Narrative B comes from BBC News. HIV creates a secret reservoir of infected cells that remain hidden from the immune system and antiretroviral therapy, which is why, while its future may look promising, further research is needed to ensure the technology would be safe and effective to rid a patient of HIV completely. As this is not peer-reviewed, a full evaluation of the research is necessary to address its possible long-term side effects.
We're going to wrap up this spin with a nerd narrative. They think that there's a 50% chance that a vaccine for HIV will be administered to 10 million people by October of 2028.
And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
Our final story today regards a recent report that says that young people are less happy than older generations. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Guardian, NPR Online News, and United Nations Western Europe. The U.S. fell out of the top 20th happiest nations in 2024 in the World Happiness Report, mostly because the well-being of American youth has declined. Experts blame society's inability to control social media for the unhappiness of younger generations. The top spot went to Finland, as researchers attributed Scandinavian countries' high ranking to social support and long life expectancies. The U.S. dropped from 15th to 23rd in the ranking, but researchers have identified notable differences between generations. Millennials, people aged 30 and younger in North America, Western Europe, Middle Eastern, South Asia, and North Africa, tend to be less happy than other age groups. In the U.S., senior citizens 60 and older were significantly happier than younger Americans. In fact, this age group is among the happiest in the world, ranking in the top 10. Dr. Vivek Murthy, the U.S. Surgeon General, reacted to the data saying younger generations are experiencing, quote, the equivalent of a midlife crisis. The World Happiness Report does not explain the causes of these historic changes, but experts say social media, financial inequality, the housing crisis, as well as fears about war and climate change continue to have an impact on young people's happiness.
Adam, thanks for the facts. The first spin is Narrative A, coming from World Happiness Report. The 2024 World Happiness Report shows significant drops by the U.S. and Germany. And in many Western nations, older people are significantly happier than young people, which may have to do with social media use. Based on increased happiness in Central and Eastern Europe, Africa, Cambodia, Russia, and China, a rich real-world social life and a social support system seem to boost happiness.
We're going to continue with a narrative B created by Greater Good. It's possible that the World Happiness Report is skewed towards cultural biases. The report fails to account for the fact that happiness is seen differently among cultures. There are individualistic societies that place a greater emphasis on individuals and their status, while collectivist cultures place a higher value on happiness only if others around them are equally happy. The report doesn't appear to take these vital culture differences into consideration.
The nerds from Metaculus say there's a 50% chance that the average overall global health security index score for 2030 will be at least 48.7. Man, I've been worried about that stat too. I don't know about you.
You know what? That's what I was thinking the whole time I was hearing that story. I was reading that story. I said, God, I wonder what the global health security index is.
Oh my gosh. It was making me unhappy just thinking about it and worrying about it.
Now, you know, I'm better now that there's a 50% chance.
That there's a 48.7. Yeah, I get it, dude. Man, wasn't that relieving?
Well, I can rest easy tonight.
Yeah, I can too.
Let's wrap this up, right? Are we done?
Oh, was that it?
I think that was it.
Kind of snuck up on me here. First time I've never been ready. All right, let's see.
I'm not ready yet either, so you're good. Okay. How's it feel?
Oh.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
right?
It feels like shit. Never again. Never
it's
again.
Freeing. It's freeing.
Never again.
It's freeing.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, March 21st, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers, and we figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all the articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.